Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. I am not joined this week, or at least this episode, by Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is out in Brooklyn covering the Milwaukee Bucks as they get prepared to take on the Brooklyn Nets in a wild, exciting series to kick off the Eastern Conference semifinals starting on Saturday. Jim, everything you have that Jim writes, you can find at jsonline.com. Lots of coverage of this Bucks team, of course. We've talked about it. You can go back and listen to our podcast from Monday. Talked a lot about looking ahead to this series against the Nets. Bucks will not be favored. First time in a long time. You got to go back to 2018 to find some playoff series, playoff action in which the Bucks were not the favored team, but this is obviously going to be a lot of fun and pretty special. I wanted to look back in time at another special playoff run. That would be 20 years ago. We just hit, actually on Thursday, the 20th anniversary of Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Milwaukee Bucks lost that game to the Philadelphia 76ers. Controversial ending. Many people know about it. The conspiracy, quote-unquote, that gave Philadelphia an advantage in fouls, gave an advantage when Scott Williams was retroactively ruled to have committed a flagrant two, wound up suspended for Game 7 of that series. Very costly to the Bucks. You know a lot about that, but here's the thing. You may not know a lot about what came before that. The Charlotte Hornets series that went to seven games right before that 76ers series. The Orlando Magic series that happened very early in Tracy McGrady's career. A 3-1 series win for the Bucks. That was their first series win in over a decade. So I wanted to bring in a guest, somebody who would be perfect to talk about that run, and none other than the voice of the Milwaukee Bucks, Ted Davis, radio voice. The guy, he was about 5 years into his career at that point with the Milwaukee Bucks. He'd come from Dallas and was a firsthand witness to everything that went on in the 2001 season, a very exciting year for Milwaukee Bucks fans, and the entire playoff run. So we talk conspiracy, but we also talk about kind of the breakthrough moment for that team that season. It's kind of a funny story. A lot of behind the scenes stuff from, you know, the moment Scott Williams found out he was suspended, things like that. So give my conversation with Ted Davis a listen. Thanks for tuning in on this week's edition of the Point Forward podcast. Jim and I will be catching you up, probably getting back together again early next week to catch you up on what went on here in the first couple games of this series. But here is Ted Davis. My very special guest is Ted Davis. You know him, of course, as the voice, the radio voice of the Milwaukee Bucks. He's been serving in that capacity for well over two decades at this point, which means he was there 20 years ago when the Milwaukee Bucks went to the Eastern Conference Finals. The 2001 Finals against the Philadelphia 76ers went seven games. Many fans remember it. Many of them are still a little bummed out about how it went, particularly as it relates to the league office. And we will get to the conspiracy talk, I promise. But I don't want to focus on just that. I want to talk about the whole playoff run, especially in light of the fact that the Bucks are back in the Eastern Conference semifinals and looking to do something similar this year. Ted, I'd be remiss though if I didn't talk just real briefly about this year's team. I'm sure you're getting set to go to Brooklyn as the Bucks are getting ready to take on the Nets. Where's your head at with this team? I mean, this is a pretty exciting series coming up. Could be the NBA Finals level series we're looking at. Just give me your thoughts off the top of your head going into the 2021 Eastern Conference semis.
I think this is going to be the most entertaining series of the entire playoffs. And I mean, the Eastern Conference Finals, the Western Conference Finals, maybe even the NBA Finals. It's a shame that this matchup is not for the NBA Championship, because I think these are the two best teams in the NBA right now. The Utah Jazz might argue that, but I think these are the two high-scoring teams. Games are going to be in the 120s probably, 120, 117. If you can base it on what they did during the regular season when they played three games, every game was close. Each team had a chance to win, and it's just going to be fun. You've got the two highest-scoring teams in the league. You've got maybe the three best scorers that have been on one team in NBA history in James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. And then you've got the Bucks, who in the offseason and during the regular season did a lot of things to ensure that they would be better at playoff time than they were a year ago, and they are. I think they're uniquely qualified to guard the big three for the Nets. Holiday can guard multiple defenders. He can guard Harden. He can guard Irving. You've got Giannis. You can put him on Kevin Durant. You've got P.J. Tucker, who's like the Swiss Army knife of defense. He can guard multiple positions. And I think it's going to go seven. It's going to come down to the end of every game. Can the Bucks get key stops when the game is on the line against three of the best scorers in the history of the league?
There are some parallels with this season and 2001. Not many, but there's some. And one might be just the way the regular season went, not necessarily precisely in terms of wins, losses, but I know there were many Bucks fans that were a little down on how this regular season went versus how they had done the previous 2 years. In 2001, the Bucks under George Karl were really kind of trying to get their feet under them. They'd had a couple playoff appearances in a row, but still hadn't won a playoff series since the 80s, 1980s, late 80s. They start the year 3-9, and it didn't look great. In fact, George Karl later talked about that, how, you know, it's a good thing they got things going. When they did, there was as much pressure then to get things squared away as there was actually in the playoffs. What do you remember about the 2001 season? Was it primed to be this breakthrough that it ultimately ended up becoming? Was it seen as a little bit of a disappointment at the start? Like, do you have any memories from that early start to the season?
Oh, yeah. I thought going into training camp that they were going to be really good. They had a lot of pieces that I thought would take them a long way. And then they broke training camp and started the season. And you're right, they got off to a bad start. We're 3-9 after the first 12. And we were all kind of shaking our heads and scratching our heads going, what is going on here? This team is a whole lot better than this, so why aren't they winning? Well, we went down to Florida. And we played Orlando, and George Karl had this kind of odd friend of his named Tootie. And he was, I don't know how to describe Tootie other than that he looked like a really hairy Woody Allen. And he was kind of this basketball savant. He was like a basketball Rain Man. And he knew, like, every NBA player, their stats, how tall they were, where they went to college, what hometown they were from. And George Karl collected these kind of characters that were around him. And Tootie fashioned himself as somewhat of a member of the coaching staff. And so on the way to shoot around in Orlando, Tootie's on the bus, and he put on a video of him trying to do a legitimate basketball clinic, okay? And here's this little hairy Woody Allen, about 5'6", 5'7", trying to do a basketball clinic. He didn't mean to be funny, but I'm telling you, it was one of the funniest damn things you've ever seen. And guys on the bus are cracking up. Before Tootie put that video on, it was a very quiet bus. I think the team was kind of somber about their start. Tootie puts that video on. Everybody starts laughing. They get to shoot around. And the players start mimicking some of the stuff that Tootie said to do in drills on the video, which were just hilarious, the big guys out there doing this. And they won that game. They broke through that night and won. They went down to Miami the next night. They were down 24 going to the fourth quarter. Came all the way back to win the game on a late three-pointer by Sam Cassell. They went down there. They won two games. And that right there was the turning point of the season, and I credit that stupid video by Tootie, the weird friend of George, who looked like a hairy Woody Allen, for breaking the tension in the bus, and that sent the Bucks off to a better season.
Oh man, that's a great story. Shout out to Tootie, wherever he may be. They opened the playoffs against Orlando, heavily favored to win that series, which is saying something similar, in my mind, to the 2018-19 Bucks that hadn't won a playoff series in forever since 2001, but were still seen as pretty heavy favorites to beat Detroit, which of course they did. But this Orlando team was interesting. They had Doc Rivers as their coach, second year guy. Obviously, that's early in his career. I didn't realize he was a finalist to be general manager of the Bucks a couple years earlier when they hired Bob Weinhauer. That was interesting. And then Tracy McGrady, in the very early stages of his career, he had a sensational start, rookie season. He's the guy that they have to stop. The Bucks did win that series 3-1. McGrady had a particularly strong game three to extend it to a fourth game. But what other memories do you have from the Orlando series, if anything, that really sticks out?
I remember McGrady was really good, and Glenn Robinson was having a hard time guarding him. And then Tracy McGrady, after that win that kept them alive, I think he referred to Glenn Robinson, who had the nickname Big Dog. I think he referred to him as Big Puppy.
Yes,
or
Puppy
something
Dog.
Like that.
Yes.
Yeah, Big Puppy Dog. And that went around the locker room, and I think motivated the Bucks for the next game. Glenn Robinson had a big game. Ray Allen had a big game. And they went ahead and took care of that series and then moved on to Charlotte, which was just an incredible series that went all the way down to a game seven.
I read a lot of old stories from this time period, and more so than even now, the storyline of when a team doesn't get respect nationally, especially being in the small market, that comes up a lot, comes up every year in some way, shape, or form. But it really felt like I was reading a lot about that with this Bucks team. And it was, you know, back then, NBC was sort of the showcase place where you would see games, and their playoff games weren't showing up on NBC. TNT, which of course is like the main thing now, was seen as sort of a second tier thing, and that's where you would maybe find those Bucks Magic games. Do you recall that at all, that that this team was particularly fixated on having respect, you know, just in terms of TV coverage, but also just in terms of a national profile?
A little bit, because Milwaukee had been bad at basketball for a long time. You know, it had been more than a decade since the Don Nelson era came to an end. In fact, it may have been like 15 years. Mm-hmm. And in the late 80s, early 90s, there was some really bad basketball that was played at the Bradley Center. And so they finally had a team that could make another run. And so, yeah, I think there was a little bit of a chip on the shoulder of some of the guys on that team to prove some people wrong. And it was an odd team in that they weren't a great defensive team. They were predicated on offense. But they might not be a good defensive team for the first three quarters, but they found a way to become a good defensive team in the fourth quarter. So they could get stops when they needed it, and they had a whole bunch of shot makers. You know, you used to start with Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson, one of the best jump shooters I've ever seen, Sam Cassell, who I wanted the ball in his hands at the key moment. He was not afraid to take the big shot and then do the big cojone dance that they have since outlawed. I miss the big cojone dance, by the way. Tim Thomas could shoot it. Lindsey Hunter could shoot it. Scott Williams could shoot it. That team could fill it up. And so their offense would overcome some lack of defense for the first three quarters.
You've heard me talk about Milwaukee Sports and Social before, the brand new rec league that's gaining a huge following in Milwaukee. Well, if you've been thinking about registering for a fun co-ed kickball or softball league this summer, now is the time to act. Early bird registration ends Saturday, June 5th. That's tomorrow, the last day for you to sign up for only $99.99. You can register as an individual or sign up with a few friends as a partial team. Milwaukee Sports and Social will then fill out your roster with fun Milwaukee locals who you can have a great summer with. If you sign up this week, you can play softball or kickball for the cheapest possible price, because our listeners get to take an extra $5 off their registration with code BASKETBALL at checkout. Make sure you take advantage of the deal this week. Register today at MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. That's MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. Yeah, and I'll talk more about their defense later, because they did actually, at least relative to what you see in scores today, which are naturally going to be a little bit down, but defensively, they definitely held their own. A couple games there against the 76ers, holding the team under 80 and under 90, really, I think the first four games of that series. But to go back to this Hornets series, definitely forgotten, because we all fixate on the Philadelphia series, especially how it ended. But this Hornets series, I would bet most fans don't realize the Bucks were down 3-2 and that they needed to really pull out some magic there to move on to face the Sixers. They were up 2-0 in the series, and then you know, Jamal Mashburn, who'd been snubbed for the All-Star game that year, maybe at the expense of, you know, maybe because Glenn Robinson was there or Ray Allen was there, he ends up showing up having a great series. What sticks out? And Sam Cassell had a great game six with sore ribs. Really, he has his moment in that series to force game seven. What sticks out about that series? The build up to it, or the way that things were in the building, anything like that?
Well, they started out 2-0, as you mentioned, and then they lost game five at home. Mm-hmm. And that put them down 3-2, and that could have turned the series. Well, they go to Charlotte for game six. It was an afternoon game, obviously on national television. The Bucks could not have had a worse first half. Nobody could hit anything. As you said, Mashburn's going off. Baron Davis is having a big game. Their crowd, which at the time in the old Hive, the Coliseum in Charlotte, they could put 23,000 in there, and they were loud that day. And I think at halftime, the Bucks were down 16, I think, something. I mean, maybe they'd cut it down a little bit, but at one point in the second quarter, they were down 16. And so you go to halftime, and you think, well, okay, maybe this run is over. Well, they they came out in the third quarter and they became the Bucks that we knew all throughout the regular season. They started hitting shots. Sam Cassell in particular went off, but Robinson hit shots. Allen hit shots. Tim Thomas hit shots. They come all the way back to win that game six to force game seven back in Milwaukee. So you go back to Milwaukee, and the one thing I remember about that game, it was a day game. It was also Marquette graduation day.
Oh, geez.
And there was an early afternoon start on NBC. I think it was 12 or 12:30, something like that. And the Marquette graduation started at like 10 in the morning. So I get there early enough, like I do, you know, 2.5 hours before game time. The Marquette graduation is just ending. And so they've got all the grads. They're getting them out. The crew that put the floor down at the Bradley Center did the fastest changeover I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, it looked like one of those deals where, you know, when they speed it up to show what they're doing, it looked like that in real time. So they got that court slapped down and ready to go by the 12 or 12:30 tip-off. The building was so loud that day. It's probably the loudest building that I've been in my 33 years of doing the NBA. The crowd was so into it. George Karl, all he had to do was walk out of the tunnel, got a standing ovation just as he walked to the bench. The game was pretty close for a while, but I remember at the end of the third quarter, Glenn Robinson hit this running three-pointer that you kind of knew when he hit that it was going to be the Bucks' day. Mm-hmm. The crowd was going crazy going to the fourth quarter, and they end up winning that game and going to the Eastern Conference Finals. I also distinctly remember going home that day because the second game was Toronto and Philadelphia to decide who the Bucks' opponent was going to be. And it came down to Philadelphia had the lead, Toronto had the ball shooting for the win. Vince Carter got a great look left wing, missed it. That was the day that he had gone to the graduation that he had in North Carolina and flew in on the day of the game and took a lot of heat for that and missed a key shot. And I remember thinking as he missed it, damn, if he hits that shot, Bucks are playing the Raptors, not the 76ers, and the Bucks would have had home court advantage. Mm-hmm. As it is, they had to go to Philadelphia. They had to play Game 7 in Philly. We know what happened after Game 6, and they didn't win, and the season ended there. I just remember how close they were to getting home court advantage.
Who knew graduation ceremonies would play such a huge role in this day on both sides of the Eastern Conference? That you mentioned that running shot Glenn Robinson hit at the end of the third quarter. That's really his biggest game in a Bucks uniform, maybe not stat-wise, but that's probably the performance that most people will remember. And you're right. I think that might be everyone I've talked to has said that's the loudest they've heard the Bradley Center. Maybe Game 6 of that series against Philly, and then maybe the Wisconsin Badgers facing Oregon in the NCAA tournament several years later. But a lot of people love to relive that Game 7. It's hard for me to explain Big Dog's legacy in Milwaukee. You know, he is a number one overall pick. And not a Hall of Famer. So in some respects, you'll always have some who feel that he didn't quite live up to the potential of being a number one draft pick. He was obviously very good, two-time All-Star for the Bucks, a player that a lot of people liked, very popular. What is his legacy in your mind? When you think of Big Dog's career, how do you describe it?
To me, it was unfulfilled because I liked Glenn. He was a really good person. He was a great shooter. But I don't think he worked on his game to the extent that a guy like Giannis has. He kind of relied on natural ability and didn't really take care of himself in some of the off-the-court things that he did. And I think it shortened his career. Ray Allen played a lot longer than he did. Sam Cassell had a longer career than he did. So I think you're right. As the number one pick, he wasn't a bad player. In fact, you pointed out that he was a two-time All-Star. But I think there was some yardstick or some measure that he didn't get to that I think he could have if he had had a little bit more of the work ethic, of the drive and the work ethic that we see from Giannis. And so, you know, guys are who they are. Some players have that, some players don't. Giannis does. I don't think Glenn really did.
Another guy who is a little bit of an enigma, was Tim Thomas, a guy that had been coming off the bench for the Bucks, sixth man of the year finalist. He actually loses that year, takes second to Aaron McKee of the 76ers. They had coach of the year in Larry Brown. They had defensive player of the year in Dikembe Mutombo. Allen Iverson was the MVP, and Aaron McKee was the sixth man of the year. Tim Thomas was a Philadelphia guy. He went to Villanova, and then, you know, he started in Philadelphia, winds up only there for a year before he goes to Milwaukee. He's another guy that's hard to explain. Like, I don't think people remember him in Bucks history, the role that he had. What do you remember about Tim Thomas? I know that's kind of random to go from Glenn Robinson to a guy who wasn't a starter, but what sticks out in your mind when you think of him?
I always say that Tim Thomas, if you were going to go into a lab and kind of like, you know, Dr. Frankenstein, you're going to build the perfect, the prototypical basketball player, you would have come out with Tim Thomas. Mm-hmm. He was 6'10". He had some of the athletic ability that Giannis has. He could run the floor. He could dribble like a guard. He was a terrific shooter, but he could post up too. And yet Tim, I think, kind of floated on his talent, a little bit like what Glenn was. I don't think Tim had the drive to be a superstar. He was content to be a very good NBA player. And because of that, he was a little bit of an enigma. He would do things that you go, damn, man, that's a hell of a player. And then the next game, he might not be. He was inconsistent. But for that playoff run, he played really, really well. And he just had the perfect body to play NBA basketball. He was 6'10", but played like a guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would have been really good in modern game, too. He would have translated, I have a feeling, if his head had stayed in it. So, like I said, the Bucks hold the 76ers down a lot. Now, Allen Iverson doesn't play in Game 3, but after dropping Game 1, the Bucks put the clamps down, and they kind of take control of this series. Did it feel like, because you read up on the Hornets games and the Magic game, it felt like to me that the Bucks weren't clicking on all cylinders through most of those playoffs, and then maybe finally we started to glimpse that in that 76ers series. Do you remember that? Do you remember feeling like, okay, the Bucks have finally found their groove and they're going to win this series?
Well, I remember they were up 2-1, and they had a Memorial Day game at the Bradley Center. If they had won that one, they're going to win the series. Mm-hmm. They couldn't break through that day. They just, for some reason, a team that could hit a lot of shots, as I recall, didn't hit a lot of shots that day. It was a very low-scoring game, and Philadelphia was able to grind it out. Mutombo was very good at protecting the rim. I think, I don't remember who was the leading scorer for Philadelphia, but the score may have been in the upper 80s or low 90s.
Yeah.
And, all of a sudden you're 2-2 rather than 3-1, and you go to Philadelphia for Game 5, and you have every chance to win the game. And, boy, those shots late. I still see Glenn Robinson on the baseline. Bucks are down 1 late in the game. He's about 8 feet out on the baseline. A shot that I think he would hit 7 out of 10 times. And I'm trying to remember who the defender was. I think it was Aaron McKee, mm-hmm. who ran at him, and Glenn pump-faked. McKee flew by, so it got him off his rhythm a little bit. Glenn missed the shot. At the buzzer, Jason Caffey is trying to tip it in. He actually does tip it in, but it was after the red light, and the Bucks lose by one game. If the Bucks hit that shot, they're going to the NBA Finals because they came back and won Game 6, and that's the one play where you look back and you go, damn, that was big. And to this day, when I go back to that arena, if I ever am able to again, if we ever travel, since 2001, when we go in there for shoot around or something like that, I walk over to that spot and I look up and I go, damn, that was close.
Yeah, the 1-point loss in Game 5, and then comes Game 6, and the Bucks, that's Ray Allen's moment to shine. That's his, pretty much his magnum opus. And the way I remember it, and I could be remembering this wrong, this is the moment where it becomes clear that Ray Allen is the Bucks' best player. You know, for a while, it is this truer big three. It's Sam Cassell, Glenn Robinson, and Ray Allen together as a unit. But I don't know if people really understood that Ray Allen was, just was truly a star. And Game 6 for me, in my, recollection of events, solidified that for me. And There's more to follow with the Ray Allen story. You know, he supposedly didn't see eye to eye with George Karl. He's, of course, traded out of Milwaukee a couple years later in a very unpopular Gary Payton trade. I don't know if you could sense that tension was there during the season or during this playoff run, but or if my recollection is correct, that this is the moment Ray Allen really took a star turn. What do you remember from Game 6?
There was no tension between Ray and George during that season, not that I could see. I think that started later, but I remember that game very clearly. He was so hot. He was Steph Curry hot that night. He had 9 three-pointers. He had 41 points. He hit, you know, he came out and he hit like his first 3 or 4 threes. The audience, the crowd, which was unbelievably loud, it was as loud as Game 7 of the Hornets series, started sensing that, oh, man, he is really in the groove tonight. And when he would come down and he was taking a three, the crowd was anticipating that it was going to go in, and there was almost this whoosh of noise when he let it go. And then when he hit it, it got even louder. And I started sensing that on the broadcast, and I just used the crowd because I would say, Ray Allen, another three. And then I just shut up. And you knew that he made it by the way the crowd reacted.
Mm-hmm. How did you handle it? Oh, go ahead. Keep going.
Well, and they were way ahead. I mean, the Bucks were ahead by like 30.
Yeah.
And in the fourth quarter, Allen Iverson just detonated. I mean, he went all molten, and they made this run where I think they cut it down to 10. And, of course, that set up the moment where, late in the game, Allen Iverson is driving, and Scott Williams put a hard foul on him. They called it a flagrant one, which means that he got to stay in the game. And then the next day, you know what happened? We were going to Philadelphia for Game 7, and the NBA looked at it and said, nope, it's a flagrant two. Scott Williams suspended for Game 7.
Yes, the infamous the reassessment of that foul, NBA league office deciding after the fact. We've written and talked a lot about it. I'm curious how you handled that on the air, you know, because it wasn't just that. There was the foul disparity that had been kind of pointed out throughout the course of the series, but then really sort of took off once the Bucks and Bucks fans knew that Scott Williams was going to be unavailable for Game 6 and or Game 7. I don't know if people realized how important Williams was to them at the time. He wasn't obviously one of their big three, but he was so key to kind of what they were doing. That was a huge loss for them. And then in Game 7, right away, guys were picking up fouls really quickly, and it sort of just snowballed and exacerbated the whole issue. But were you talking about that on air? Were you able to broach that subject, or did you just kind of – was that just sort of a behind-the-scenes situation?
No, and here's how I knew. We went to the airport that day, and we're getting on the plane, and from where I could sit, I looked out the window, and at the end of the stairs going up to the plane, Ernie Grunfeld is just standing there. He's not coming onto the plane, and I didn't know why. Well, he's standing there, and here comes Scott Williams walking up to the plane to get on, and I see Ernie pull Scott aside, and he's talking to him at the bottom of the stairs, and I can see by Scott Williams' reaction, he's not happy. Scott Williams is throwing his arms up in the air, and he's stomping around. You can see that he's cursing. And I looked to John McLaughlin, who was sitting next to me, and I went, oh, crap, I think I just know what happened. I think they suspended Scott Williams. And sure enough, they did. So we got on the plane. We flew to Philadelphia. The next day, Scott Williams went to the shoot-around with us on the bus, but he wasn't allowed to even go into the arena for shoot-around. So it was a beautiful day in Philadelphia. It was in early June, very warm. We got out a shoot-around, and they had this sort of grassy incline over there. Scott Williams is just lying on the grassy incline, lying in the sun, because he couldn't come into the arena. The game tipped off at 9:15. It was like the day took forever to get to the arena. So we get there, and you know you're shorthanded anyway, and you're right. Any 50-50 call in that game did not go the Bucks' way. And we're pointing that out, I did, on the air. But the Bucks still got off to a great start. They were up 10 early, and I thought, okay, this is it. They're going to overcome this. And Larry Brown put a guy into the rotation that hadn't played a lot in the series, a guy named Rajah Bell. And all of a sudden, Rajah Bell goes off for like 10 points, and he got Philadelphia back in the game. The game's pretty close. I remember it's early fourth quarter. I think Philadelphia was up 7. Ray Allen drives to the hoop, scores. Eric Snow, who is a pretty good defender, gets underneath him. It was one of those 50-50 plays. I thought it was a foul on Eric Snow. The official said it was an offensive foul on Ray Allen. They wiped off the basket. Would have been a three-point play. Could have cut a seven-point lead to four. In addition, Ray Allen banged kneecaps with Eric Snow. He limps over to the bench. He's got to go to the dressing room for, I think it was about 4 minutes of actual clock time. He came back, but during that 4 minutes, Dikembe Mutombo blocked a few shots. Allen Iverson went off on one of his runs that he could do. By the time Ray Allen got back in the game, I think the Bucks were down like 10 or 14 points, and it was over. And I remember sitting there when the game was over, the confetti is falling, Philadelphia is celebrating, and you're just going, damn, that was close. And they brought a hat to everybody on press row. It was a red hat with blue lettering on it, had the Sixers logo. It said 2001 Eastern Conference Champions. And I'm sitting there holding this damn hat for the 76ers. And I realized, well, they had to have a hat for the Bucks. So somewhere in the back of that arena was probably a purple and green hat that said Milwaukee Bucks 2001 Eastern Conference Champions. And I was very close to getting a hat, but I didn't. I got a Sixers hat. And I still don't know where those hats are. I never saw them.
Well, maybe they only, if the league office knew the Sixers were going to win, maybe they only printed the one side for all we know. How do you look at that, looking back on that today, when people ask you about the conspiracy? Because my instinct would be to poo-poo that a little bit. But NBA officiating has had its problems in the years since. You talk to guys like Scott Williams and Darvin Ham, they don't rule it out of hand. I mean, they probably wouldn't say, no doubt the league tried to fix this for Philadelphia. I think that's probably too strong. But it does seem like the Bucks were maybe not given the same level of consideration that a team like Philadelphia would have gotten if some of the rules were reversed. How do you try to explain it now, looking back 20 years?
Oh, I don't know. You know, Glenn Robinson, who, he got bumped quite a lot. I don't think he shot a free throw until game six. It was pretty apparent that any 50-50 call was probably going to go Philadelphia's way. And did the league want Iverson against the Lakers rather than Milwaukee, Philadelphia, bigger market? I don't know. You can judge. I just know that every call that Philadelphia needed to get, they got. And there's no paper trail on anything like that. But you know, you ask yourself the question, if you're an official and you know that the league likes the bigger markets, do you err on the side of the team that's in the bigger market on 50-50 calls? It's possible. I think the Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings kind of went through that in the Western Conference when they were trying to break through with the Steve Nash teams against Kobe Bryant and the Sacramento Kings against Kobe Bryant. They kind of felt that some of the calls went the Lakers' way.
Yeah, that was so, like the next year.
It's not new in the NBA, but it's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah, for sure. I think 2002, I'm pretty sure, is the Kings, that Kings series that everyone was scratching their heads over, even more so maybe than the Bucks series. Yeah. It's good, man. It's awesome looking back. 20 years. Hard to believe it's been two decades. Really appreciate you taking the time. You know, at the outset I said, oh, you're traveling to Brooklyn, but then you made that reference there. I forgot that you're still not traveling to Brooklyn. Is there any indication that you might be able to get to games either in this series or the next one if the Bucks keep playing?
I don't know. Some of the teams are traveling their broadcasters now. The Nets broadcasters radio team is coming to Milwaukee for game 3 and 4. I've not heard anything from the Bucks as of yet. Maybe if we go beyond this round, they'll reconsider that. So, you know, that'll be brought up when it's time. For now, it looks like the road games will still be done from Pfizer Forum.
He is Ted Davis, voice of the Milwaukee Bucks. Obviously, you can hear him on 620 WTMJ calling these Bucks playoff games. Matchup with the Brooklyn Nets begins in Brooklyn from the Barclays Center on Saturday. Thanks again, Ted. Really appreciate you taking the time.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.